welcome to the Cinema Talk Podcast. Today we're all being voiced by Tom Noonan.
Today we're talking about Anomalisa, starring David Thewlis, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Tom Noonan, written and directed by Charlie Kaufman and also co-directed by Duke Johnson. I'm Ryan.
I'm Brendan.
And I'm Logan.
And we are down a mat today.
A threesome.
We are a threesome. I guess we're already jumping into it. I mean, this movie has puppet sex in it, so why can't we have threesome jokes?
God, that was disturbing.
Why can't we have puppet sex in this podcast?
Why can't we have puppet sex? These are the questions that I ask myself on a daily basis.
I mean, you can, but I don't think it would feel very good.
They're the driving force of why we do this podcast. So
Jesus, what is this episode?
I don't know. It's starting weird.
It's a weird movie.
Let's just get into it. So, Charlie Kaufman, we're back. It's been a minute since we've done a Charlie Kaufman review. It's kind of been a minute since we've put a podcast out. We do have some in the can, but we've all been super busy and we need to pump some of these out a little quicker. But, guys, I want to give, maybe your just general thoughts. On, the four Charlie Kaufman movies that, we have reviewed so far. Have you generally liked them, generally disliked them? Do you vibe with Kaufman?
I would say I generally liked them. The ones that I've been on, you know, I missed, I can't even remember the name of the movie.
Adaptation, I believe,
right? Yes, that was the one. I missed Adaptation, but all the other ones so far, I've pretty much enjoyed. I would say Eternal Sunshine was probably my favorite. They've been good so far for the most part. I've had some problems here and there, but for the most part, pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, I also have really enjoyed Charlie Kaufman's movies, all four of them. I think they're all just brilliant. You know, obviously like some more than others, but I think across the board, you know, he hasn't made a bad movie, I don't think. And, you know, I mean, I'll just kind of spoil my thoughts for this episode anyway. I quite like this movie, and I'll quite like the movie that we're talking about in the next episode. So, you know,
spoilers
across the board. Yeah, I'm just spoiling everything right now.
How dare
but
you?
But across the board, I really love Charlie Kaufman's work. I think he is a brilliant, brilliant man. And, yeah, I'm excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, I loved Kaufman going into this series and now seeing even more of his films that I hadn't seen before, like, Kaufman probably top three favorite working writer right now. One of my favorite directors now that he's moved over into directing. Eternal Sunshine's my favorite so far. If we ever release the video versions of these Zoom calls, you'll see that I have a Eternal Sunshine poster. Mm-hmm. But for now, you can just believe me when I say that. I love Kaufman. I love his movies. I'm excited to talk about this movie, and I'm thinking of ending things next week or next episode at this point. So, let's get into Anomalisa, Logan.
Yes, our plot summary comes to us from IMDb via Huggo.
Yes.
We love when Huggo writes our reviews or writes our plot summaries. So here we go. Huggo has written this plot summary for us today.
The savior of the Cinema
the
Talk
savior
podcast.
Of the Cinema Talk podcast. We might not exist if it weren't for Huggo, but, you know.
Little known fact.
Yeah, little known fact. Michael Stone is a renowned motivational speaker and author, primarily on the topic of business-customer relations. But Michael is not very motivated in his own life, in that he is having trouble relating to people, who all seem to be melding into one big mass of the same person. That big mass of one person, which even includes his wife Donna and their adolescent son Henry. He has just arrived in Cincinnati, where he will be speaking at a conference, and in the process wants to reconnect with an old flame named Bella, who lives there, in the hopes that both that he can make it up to her about the way they broke up, and that she will be the bright light he is looking for in another person. Their meeting is nothing like he wants, and he doesn't clear up anything in his life. Alone and depressed in his hotel room, he meets Emily and Lisa, two women who will be attending his seminar at the conference. While it is Emily who is usually the one to whom most are immediately attracted, Michael instead wants to get to know Lisa, because she is different than everyone else and not included within that one big mass. His attraction to her is despite her having a scar on her face, which she hides with her hair, and her being non-confident in herself as unconfident, I guess, in herself as a person. The question becomes what both Michael and Lisa can do to help the other in the issues the other one is facing, both in the short term while they are in Cincinnati and in the long term after the conference is over and they return to their respective lives.
Yeah, so guys, initial thoughts on Anomalisa?
I hated this movie. It was just, it's so pretentious and just so, like, it was weird. It was not a comfy watch.
Well, is any Kaufman movie a comfy watch?
Maybe not, but, like, at least I got something out of the other ones.
That's fair.
You know? Like, this one, it's just, like, I understand kind of what they were trying to do, but at the same time, it was just, like, everything was just so shitty, and I was just like, man, like, I couldn't connect with any of the characters, I couldn't connect with, like, the storyline. Just personally for me, this was, like, just not an enjoyable watch, and we'll get into why soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, I didn't have quite that reaction to it, but it, you know, it's probably my least favorite of his movies so far, but I still think there's a lot to like about it. I think it's, you know, it's his most simplistic, for sure, and yeah, it's tough because I get that there are issues with it, and you know, specifically some of the things that Matt has been sort of bringing up, you know, episode after episode with these Kaufman movies, how it always seems like, you know, the same male character who's just, you know, he's desperate for women and he's like sort of like bordering on incel almost. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt that. I've disagreed with that for the other ones, but I don't know. I'm sort of, well, with the exception of like being John Malkovich, he's very obviously, John Cusack's character is very obviously sort of portrayed as the villain, but at a certain point in that movie. But yeah, you know, here I sort of started to feel that a little bit, and I think it's just because the character of Michael isn't as fleshed out as the other characters are, Joel and Eternal Sunshine especially. So yeah, I do think that issue starts to seep in a little more. And yeah, I just found, you know, it's less, I think it is a little less easy to connect to as compared to the other movies, just because, like, they're not real, you know, actors. The voice actors are very good, but they're not real people, so it's a little hard to connect to. So yeah, I, you know, probably my least favorite of Kaufman so far, but I still liked it overall.
Yeah, this is near the bottom of Kaufman for me. I think this is a very good movie. I think that the Kaufman complexity of it comes through the stop motion animation, which I don't even think we've really mentioned yet, that this is a stop motion animated film, rather than live action. And I think that's where a lot of the creativity, the surrealist stuff comes from, that Kaufman normally brings to the table. I think if this was just a normal, normally acted film, just based off the words on the page, I don't think it necessarily would have had that. But Kaufman, I'm assuming, went into writing the script knowing what he was doing in terms of the visual style and doing it in stop motion. I think that this is a very Kaufman movie in terms of the ultimate theme and idea behind it. I don't necessarily agree that it goes into the almost incel category with Michael. I think a lot of Kaufman's movies, maybe with the exception of John Cusack and occasionally Nick Cage's characters, in those respective movies, it's more about loneliness than not being able to, like, be with women. Like, I feel like it's a more general loneliness malaise that some people take as just, like, all he cares about is sex with women, and he can't have it.
Yeah, that's definitely true, and, you know, it's not that he can't be with women, because, I mean, obviously they're all kind of, you know, fawning over him in a certain way. But, yeah, I guess it's more so that this person is sticking out. I mean, he has a wife. You know, he's had romantic interests in the past, but they all just sort of blend together. And then, of course, here, even in this movie, we see that even, you know, his new love starts to blend in to this, you know, big mass, as Hugo called it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, we'll get there later. There's yeah, a specific scene that I was thinking of, with the incel adjacent comments, you know.
Mm. I mean, gotcha. To like, even if he's not an incel, he's still like a predator, you know, like just this like there's something about, like, this old man, like, getting this, like, younger woman drunk to, like, take her back to his room and have sex with her because he thinks she's unique, that, like, just doesn't sit right with me regardless of the context, you know?
Yeah, Floyd, is it all right with you if we just go into this scene now?
Yeah,
just real quick. I guess, and you said a younger woman, I guess it was probably came from the puppetry, but I never really, like, got that she was a lot younger.
I mean, no matter how old, like, she is, sure. It's still predatory and weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really rubbed me the wrong way is that, you know, both of the women sort of look up to him as, like, you know, a celebrity, and then he sort of uses that power a little bit. What comforts me a little bit about it is that I think that if he weren't... It's a couple of things. I think that if he weren't a celebrity, they still probably would have had this connection. And, you know, they still might have had that human interaction. The other thing is, I think in his dialogue, he proves, you know, a combination of the way the dialogue is written for Michael Stone and the way that... I just lost his name. The voice actor, Lupin.
David Thewlis.
Yeah, the way that David Thewlis, voice acted, which is very good. I think it comes off very genuine, and, you know, we don't... I mean, when he's talking about, you know, how unique she is and how she's... he feels something different with her, and he's, like, never stopped talking, and, you know, he's complimenting her singing in that really weird scene where she sings, like, the entire
girls
song.
Girls just want to have fun.
Not that good. I think he is, you know, being genuine there, and I think he really does, care about her, if for weird reasons, and, you know, if with weird methods of getting there. Does that make sense a little bit? Because I don't think he's trying to be manipulative, but maybe he's just sort of using his.
I don't think that the ultimate goal when he met her was to sleep with her.
Yeah.
I never really took it that way. For me, and the reason why I didn't take it as predatory while watching is that, like, he, like, in terms of, we didn't really get to this, but in terms of the whole, the Kaufman-esque thing in it, with the stop-motion animation, she was the only person that looked or sounded any different.
Right.
So I took it as, in having that connection that Logan was talking about, I kind of saw the sex as, like, a byproduct of their connection, not as, like, ultimately what he wanted out of it. But I guess you could read it the other way as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just saw it at, like, I don't really see... I didn't really get the connection. I don't think that they would have had it without his celebrity status. Because he, like... You know, even as, like, a puppet, you can tell that, like, this is an older guy. Like, it's an old man, and, like, he's not, like, you know, built to be, like, conventionally attractive. It's just, they are only attracted to him because of his fame, you know? Like, not to comment too much on the attractiveness of puppets, but, like, the way that I saw it was, like, when Emily, or whatever her name was like, oh, yeah, like, he's gorgeous. I was like... Really? Like, I don't know. I feel like they didn't really build on their connection. And like, the dialogue to
me at times... I've seen some sexy puppets in my life, and he is not one of them.
He is not one of them. You know, you watch the Muppets, and... No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But he, like... I don't know. It's just... There's something about, like... Even their dialogue after the fact, when they're talking, is so, like... awkward and forced, and like, it's so, like, it was so obvious to me that she didn't want to be there, and it was like, it was written like, you know how John Green kind of has this style where he'll just pick random shit, it seems like, and be like, this is now a facet of their character. Like, oh yeah, she really loves Sarah Brightman albums, and like, she worked in phone service, and she had a 60-year-old boyfriend. Like, it's like, you know, it felt to me like Charlie Kaufman at that point for the dialogue was just throwing darts at a wall and was like, yeah, cool, this. It didn't seem apparent to me that there was, like, some magical connection to me. And, like, just the fact that, like, this one random woman is, like, somehow unique. I understand what they were going for. I understand what they were going for within the context of, like, everyone being the same and, like, her having this, like, different voice and different face and what have you. But, like, it's still, like, it felt like means to an end for me, and that's why, like, it just didn't sit right with me at all. And then kind of through that, the whole plot falls apart, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I can't really, you know, disagree with it that much, because it's, you know, it's a matter of opinion in the way you take the film. But for me, like, I agree that I never felt the connection the way I think I was supposed to, but I think in terms of the nature of the relationship, I understood what the characters were supposed to be feeling at the time, even if I wasn't necessarily feeling completely attached to the film because of their relationship.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, Logan, I'm not sure if you have any specific input on just, like, the predatory nature of it, rather than just, like, sort of, because I don't see him as much of an incel, you know, even, because to me, it's not that he was, like, craving women particularly, it's just that, like, he was using his power to, like, get what he wanted.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't have a specific, you know, rebuttal to that. I think in regards to, you mentioned how he's sort of like getting her drunk and sort of priming her in that way. I don't think that's the case, because, I mean, there are specific lines of dialogue where, you know, she's like, he's like, can I get you a drink? And she's like, yeah, I would love one, or something like that. So, like, right. She's not really, you know, she's not being really coerced. She's, but yeah, I agree that there is a little bit of a mismatch in power. You know, I want to say that maybe that's kind of the point of it, but I don't feel like there's enough just in this movie, like, thematically. Like, I don't feel like there's very much here. So, which is weird for a Kaufman movie. It's weird to not, you know, have tons to think about and to you know, pour over in your mind, but I don't...
Well, yeah, I would push back on that a little bit, because I think that the majority of the film, in terms of what I took from it, was the stop motion animation and what he could do with that. I think the what Brendan mentioned about having everyone has the same face other than Lisa and Michael.
Oh, I mentioned this off mic.
I think you briefly mentioned it on mic.
Did I?
I think you did. Everyone has the same face. Everyone looks the same.
Same voice, obviously.
Same voice, right, by Tom Noonan, no matter who the character is.
Which, can you imagine the amount of hours he would have had to put in the studio to get, like, all those background voices? That's insane.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot.
And Kaufman, I'm sure, would have had to been like, okay, now you say this line, and you're having this conversation that no one's ever going to be able to actually discern.
There's, like, a specific
and Tom Noonan's going to be like, great.
That he does, like, 10 times throughout, like, the opening and the credits. I just thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, we talked about Tom Noonan briefly with Synecdoche, New York, and... Yeah, he's a really good character actor that I enjoy in this movie. But I think the relationship and the point of the movie comes through in that. And ultimately what the movie is about, to me, is even though Jennifer Jason Leigh, Lisa, Jennifer Jason Lisa, since this movie likes to combine words and names, she has this unique voice, she has this unique look, but then... Slowly, Michael realizes that in the end, when he thinks he has this connection, it's just it's the same. It's about this, like, closed off void that he feels like he lives in, which again, I think is consistent with Kaufman. And if this was just a normal script with all these different characters, you wouldn't really get that. But with the stop motion animation and having the ability to have everyone have the same face and the same voice, more naturally with the medium, I think that communicates the ultimate goal of the film, which is just, again, like most of his films, to say that we're all fucking alone.
Yay.
Which seems to be Kaufman's main point that he likes to drive home at all times.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just last week we were talking about how kind of, you know, each Kaufman movie uses very, very weird things, very weird dialogue, very weird cinematography, and plots to, you know, touch on a specific neurosis, a specific anxiety that is just sort of inherent to the human experience. And in this one, it's, you know, feeling like everything around you is the same and, you know, everything's just sort of dull. And then, I mean, he gets something and it just turns out to be the same thing. It's just so depressing. I think one of the
and his face falls off.
And his face falls off.
That's a fun dream sequence. Yeah. I like that.
And, you know, I think one of the scary things about Michael's character is that we don't know how many times this has happened to him. We don't know how many, you know, Lisas he's met, and he's been like, oh my God, your voice is different. I can hear you. And then, you know, he'll kind of do weird sort of creepy stuff like this, like he does with Lisa, and then just in the end, he just kind of finds out that they're still, you know, just the same, or he's still perceiving them to be part of the same, you know, part of the system, the machine, whatever it is. So I don't know. I mean, the more I think about it, maybe it's sort of, maybe there's a purpose for the sort of predation that we see. I don't think that Kaufman is ever unaware of what he's putting on screen. I think he's always very self-aware. I think you can always see that. And so I think that, you know, since Michael is a little bit predatory in that scene, which, I mean, we're spending a lot of time on just talking about that one scene, but, like, it's sort of the climax. Literally. Anyway, but since...
Way too long. My biggest complaint with this movie, that scene is way too fucking long. But, you need a cut, bro.
But I do...
And horrifying.
I do always feel like Kaufman is, with whatever he's putting on the screen, he's very self-aware. So, you know, it's hard for me to fault the movie for that weirdness in that scene, because I think he's got to be aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, this is the reference, I had to research this. The hotel is called the Fregoli or Fregoli, which is an actual mental illness disorder that Michael may or may not have, where everyone does look and sound the same. So that's a direct reference to that.
And very similar to the Cotard syndrome, which we talked about last week.
Yes. Yeah. Kaufman likes to do this kind of things.
I was wondering if there was something in here that was like a connection to a real medical disorder. Like, I was thinking there might be, but yeah, okay, that's really good.
And whether or not he actually has this disorder, I don't think it ultimately matters to the film.
No, it's just kind of like this is what it's about. You know how I'm thinking about it is how sort of the murders in Seven are related to the seven deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, last week, but last episode was Synecdoche, New York, Caden Cotard syndrome. Not necessarily saying that he has that, but sort of just putting you know, it's themed around that kind of thing. And not necessarily saying that Michael Stone has the Fregoli, whatever the disease is actually named, but, you know, putting you in that sort of mind frame. So I like that. I like that he drew another connection.
Yeah, I think Kaufman, what he likes to do is to take that idea of, like, what that would be like and then extrapolate that onto, like, what everyone feels in some ways.
That's a kind of cool way to build a career. Like, with the exception of, you know, I mean, his earlier stuff didn't do it that I know of, and, you know, I'm thinking of Ending Things is based on a book, so he won't do it there. But, like, in the future, if he just sort of looks up weird mental disorders and then makes movies about, you know, sort of vaguely in
what that would feel
in that frame, I'm cool with that. I think that's a great thing to do.
What I love about Kaufman's films that we've reviewed is, like, being John Malkovich, they're all about something that everyone can relate to in some way, right? There's Being John Malkovich, which is the lust to be someone else, you know, to not be yourself, to not have to live in your own existence. There's Adaptation, which is the creative process just thudding against the wall of a creative process. There's Eternal Sunshine, which is like feeling distant from or maybe regret with a previous relationship. Synecdoche, New York, which is again just just depression, I think, in general. And then Anomalisa is feeling alone. And then we'll get to what I'm thinking of Ending Things is. And in a lot of ways, I think it works. And again, in terms of this is just a side note, but I know Logan wouldn't relate to this, but Brendan, as a fellow single person, I believe, whenever this the basic idea of this film of, like, all of the voices, especially right now on during quarantine, where the only, like, people we're talking to are over the internet, it's really easy to just, like, I don't remember who you are. Like, I talked to you 3 months ago. Like, I couldn't tell you who that person was that I had a conversation with online for a week, you know, when and never, you know, talked to again. It right now, I don't know if this would always feel the same way for me. Just the way that people blend together, I related to in some ways with this film. I don't know if you could also feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely one aspect of it. Just in terms of, like, I don't know. It's interesting, though, because, like, even with the pandemic and stuff, from a non-dating perspective, I still feel like I'm able to maintain connections with people.
Maybe I'm just bad at it.
Maybe. I don't know. But, like,
you
even,
just
like...
I suck at communication.
But like even like my, you know, obviously I'm back at school now and my friends who are like 7 or 8 hours away, or more, like I still feel like I'm able to connect with them, just as well as I was before, before the pandemic. And even like my friends at school, it is difficult though, on like an acquaintance level, I think.
I think that's more what I'm getting at, yeah, than like good friends.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because like you follow these people on social media and they like you see that they're like doing stuff and it's like, oh yeah, I haven't seen you in a year. Like that's yeah. So it's like weird to think about. It's like people that I would have just like seen in passing and said hi to. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. That doesn't happen anymore. We're just like, I know that you are alive and because you're like posting things, but I don't have any real way to like connect with you just because we're not that close, you know?
And again, like, this is a byproduct of the time, and I don't think it's necessarily what the film was going for in terms of, you know, social media, but that it kind of gets to that same thing where after a while the people who you don't make the effort to have that ongoing connection with, they kind of all just blend in the same space in your mind, right?
You know what I'm wondering about is I think in my headcanon here, with Bella and with his wife, Donna, I think with the... I never thought about the fact that their names form Belladonna, but that's weird and kind of maybe significant. Probably not. But with those two characters, I'm wondering if maybe, you know, at one point, they too had sort of a different voice. And then, you know, he meets Bella, he thinks... actually, he was with Donna first. So, you know, maybe when Michael first met Donna, he was like, wow, her voice really stands out to me. He sort of formed this connection. And then as time went on, she just started blending into everything, you know, with everyone else. And then he meets Bella and he's like, oh my God, this is something new. Like, we have something really special. And then, you know, eventually she just sounds, you know, she sounds like Tom Noonan. And then...
Which happens to us all.
It happens to us all.
One day it'll all happen to us all.
After a certain point in a relationship, your significant other just starts to sound like Tom Noonan, and you just gotta live with it.
It's the part of life.
So yeah, what do you guys think about that theory? Do you think that makes sense? We don't really have reason to believe it based on what's in the movie, but it's sort of fun to think about.
I don't think there's a reason not to believe it. I think that absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, it seems to be kind of a commentary on, like, the cyclical nature of relationships and continually making the same mistakes. And, like, falling in love with someone and then kind of, you know, there's the scene where, like, they're having breakfast together and he's like, stop, like, chewing with your mouth open and like, hitting your teeth against the fork and, like, realizing
and like
all
right
of these things.
Right after he's like, let's move away and start our life together. And then
he starts noticing
all those things. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that thing where you're meeting any person for the first time. You're like, oh, I really jive with you. Like, whether or not it's platonic, romantic, anything like that. And then you're like, oh, shit, there's little things about every person that are going to piss somebody off. You know?
It felt like... No, I'm not gonna spoil that movie. Never mind. It didn't feel like anything, to be honest. No, I'm kidding.
Well, and that's the thing, though. There are tiny things that I'm sure that all of us do that someone we know, it pisses them off. And they might never say it to us. They might say it to us. Like, and there's things little... Like, everyone knows that there are things that everyone does that will rub one person the wrong way just because of a natural pet peeve that they have.
True.
But
you know, once you've known a person for that long, then you know, you would think all those things and you might say them out loud. But like if you first met someone, you know, you'd be like, I would never say those things about you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael's a dick. I mean, like, let's be honest.
Yeah,
like Michael is a dick.
Yeah.
Most of Kaufman's characters suck.
Yeah.
Most of his protagonists suck. Fair. Specifically John Cusack.
Well, just, and again, probably like, the worst with Synecdoche, right? New York, he wasn't making a depressing movie. He was just making an honest movie. I don't think he wants all his characters to suck. He just wants all his characters to be kind of real. And, you know,
I think Joel
suck.
Is the most likable.
Yeah,
right?
That's fair.
What?
I think Joel is the most likable. From Eternal Sunshine. I feel like Joel is the most, like, fully rounded human that we get to see in any of his movies. And I know that we keep talking about his entire filmography, but I think that's because this is a very simple film with only an hour and a half runtime. But for me, Joel, compared to, like, Michael or John Cusack or even the fictional version of Charlie Kaufman in adaptation, where it feels like we get to see every side of Joel. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how we, like, in this movie and in Synecdoche, New York, we don't really see them be happy or really have, like, a full human experience. But just by nature of what the story tells in Eternal Sunshine, I think Joel is, like, a fully formed human that we see. That's, like, has his ups and his downs, and you can understand him as a person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. Yeah, because Michael just blatantly sucks in this movie, and there's not really many... there's not really many redeeming qualities to him, but I think you're right not to revisit Eternal Sunshine too much. But like, I think that there's just things about Joel that make him like an empathetic character.
Like he does things that suck, but at the same time, it's not like piece of shit.
You know?
Yeah.
Like whereas some of these other characters, it's like right, you're just like, you're showing us one very specific side of this like person or kind of person that you're like, right, this like this guy sucks.
And I don't think Caden in like Synecdoche, New York is necessarily a terrible person. He's just depressed. He's just sad. Like every time I think of that movie, I'm just like, oh god, that poor dude. That's rough, but I don't know.
I had one more thing I wanted to talk about, just so we can keep this...
This is going to be such a short podcast.
I think that's honestly fine. I don't think there's that much to talk about, but I did want to mention, I think it's interesting that, you know, Tom Noonan, for the second podcast in a row, for the second Kaufman movie in a row, he is sort of just, like, representing something. He's very much...
An idea.
He's very much, like, a metaphorical character. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And, you know, in Synecdoche, we talked about maybe he's time or aging, or maybe he's, you know, the view of an audience or something like that. And I think here, you know, it's very clear what he is. He's mundane life. He is everyone. Everyone is everyone in this movie. So I think that's kind of interesting. I Kaufman reuses actors, you know, Catherine Keener's in everything, and he
Thewlis is in I'm thinking
right
of
and Jennifer
things.
Jason Leigh in both this and Synecdoche. So, you know, he reuses actors, and I think in Tom Noonan he's definitely reusing him in a very specific way.
No, I agree, and I think it's good stuff.
I'm curious as to whether or not that just also stems from them being like good actors that he just wanted to work with again, and or if that's like, you know, derivative of their plots. Mm-hmm.
I think
I was just gonna say, because I hear from a lot of directors that they're like, yeah, if I find someone that I like to work with, I'll just keep hiring them over and over again.
Exactly, that's what I was gonna say. You find people that you work well with. You find people that you think you can pull a good performance out of, and I think you just keep going with that.
Yeah. And again,
you become friends with people, and then you're like, oh, I'm friends with you, and we have a good working relationship, and you're good on screen, so why not cast
I'll cast you in my project or whatever.
There's a really good meme of...
I mean, all of us do that, so...
There's a really good meme out there. It's the meme with the guy looking at the two buttons, and he's, like, wiping his brow or whatever.
Yeah.
it's like David Lynch trying to figure out the lead for his next project, and both buttons are just Kyle MacLachlan. makes sense.
I wish we got more Kyle MacLachlan at all times. I wish he was in more
I
stuff.
Wish he were just in everything. I wish he were in this. Could he have replaced Tom Noonan in this?
I mean, I wouldn't have been able to not think of Agent Cooper if all I was hearing was Agent Cooper.
Did you guys know that he's the dad in Inside Out? I just realized that recently.
Yeah,
I did.
That's kinda
yeah,
why he is. Yeah. He's also in Tesla, which I started but didn't get a chance to finish. Yeah. So he plays Edison in that movie.
Interesting.
Who, I've learned more recently, Thomas Edison, not a good person.
No, he's not a good dude.
Probably not. I think you can assume that if they existed in the past and they were white, probably a bad person.
Probably not a cool person.
You know, electricity, cool. The rest of it, not great.
Not really the best.
Not great, but I don't know. The dream scene's cool. I like when his face falls off. That's fun with playing with the medium.
You can see the maquette inside, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, go ahead.
Finish your thing. I was going to bring up something else, and hopefully that would have this podcast a little more.
I was just going to say that I think I do enjoy seeing Kaufman break out into a different medium, like a stop motion. Like, that's cool. Like, that's bold. Like, to be like, I'm going to make a stop motion movie when he has no experience with it. I'm assuming that's what Duke Johnson was there for in terms of directing. I'm assuming he was the stop motion director. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, regardless of the thing in the movie, for an established writer-director to be like, I'm going to make my second feature as a director be a stop-motion movie, like, that's a bold move and an impressive move that I respect regardless of the quality.
Yeah, I always try to think about, like, with animated movies, even, like, Pixar, even though, like, animated movies is kind of all they do, like, what was the reason for making this an animated film? Like, why was it not just a regular film? And I think I think there's very, you know, clear reason for it here.
To make everyone look the same. Yeah,
make everyone look the same, make everyone sound the same. And I think it absolutely works. I mean, the, you know, we didn't talk about it a lot, but the opening, I just briefly mentioned it, but the opening of the film, when it's just all the overlapping Tom Noonans and the credits of the film, where it's like, I haven't been to a theater in so long, obviously.
It's been so long.
That, like, when I was listening to,
almost
like,
a year.
The chatter at the end of like just Tom Noonan's talking after the movie, that was profound, man. I was like, I wish that I could be in a theater and, you know, hear people
have
talking about
around you.
Yeah, and just
yeah.
So I very much enjoy those parts, and I think he does a great job working with the medium, and I think there's absolutely a reason for it. So yeah, well done.
Yeah, stylistically, it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's stop-motion nudity than I've ever seen.
I didn't need that.
Which is a down for this movie. Down
that.
Arrow for
down
that part.
Downvote that on Reddit.
Downvote
yeah.
the felt penis.
Down, yeah.
Upvote GameStop, though.
yeah, I, you
that's
know,
that's topical.
It's,
people aren't going to get that joke in, like, a week.
In, like, a week.
I know.
When Twitter has moved on. Yeah, no, in terms of just, like, the medium, I think it's an interesting choice. I didn't love the way that it looked. I think that, you know, just, like, the, like, quality of the puppets that they were using weren't, like, nearly dynamic enough for me. And they, like, just... I'm reading here now that they were made, like, they were specifically, like, 3D printed, but it looked, like, too, like, cobbled together to me, like... you know, almost like an episode of, like, Robot Chicken or something. But, like, I don't know. It's just, in terms, because we've reviewed one other stop-motion movie on this podcast, and I, first of all, enjoyed that movie significantly more. And also, I think that the style and the way that it was done was just so much better. It's sort of the kind of thing where you get this, like, I don't know, this weird whiplash from it, just from it being, like, it's an interesting choice, you know, to do this whole story as, like, a stop-motion feature, but it's just bad enough that I was like, I don't enjoy this, and also the fact that, like, I understand what they were going for by making everyone look the same and sound the same, but at the same time, it's a weird statement on race, I think, to, like, not have any, like, puppets that weren't white, and, like, it, especially, like, in terms of, if we're saying that that's because of Michael Stone and the things that are, like, happening in his head, it's a weird commentary, like, on the character, who we already know sucks, so maybe that was the point, but, like, I don't know, it just kind of seemed, like, off to me, and I didn't enjoy it that much.
Yeah, I would push back on that. Being, you know, bearing in mind that we're three white guys doing a podcast. I think that it comes as close as you can to being a non-statement on race. And I think that if you make, you know, if you have Tom Noonan voicing some, you know, black puppets, I think that gets into a little bit of an issue that we're seeing now with, you know, Kristen Bell having to be removed from Central Park, from, you know, Jenny Slate being removed from Big Mouth.
That's in terms of, like, representation with casting your characters correctly. I mean, like, I understand the point behind, like, this hive mind kind of mentality that they were going for. But at the same time, you're definitely right about that.
So I think that they either run into that issue, or the other option is, like, you cast a black voice actor, all the characters are black, and then it becomes, like I feel like that would be a lot weirder if it were, like, this white man's, like, nightmare dream of black people
that,
around
that
him.
Feels
I think that
worse.
Would read
that
very.
Feels a lot worse.
So, that's like, fair. That's not what I was saying, but
yeah,
I
do.
Well, yeah, but, like, that's the alternative, I think,
yeah.
Right?
That's so, like, what would you propose as, like, an alternative to avoid both of those issues? Because that's what I always try to think about. I always try to, you know, see, like, what would I do in this situation? What would you do?
I don't know. Well, because that's another thing. I think it just kind of ties directly into the concept, which is, I mean, like, I probably just wouldn't have made the movie. But, like, I don't necessarily know which of those options are better. I'm not going to claim to. But I do know that, like, it still kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Just that, like, I don't know. It seemed very, like, kind of, you know, just this, like, white fantasy sort of playing out in this form of animation. But I don't know. I don't know what the best alternative would have been.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, maybe making the character of Michael black would be... I don't know, because that would be a little bit weird. And then, like, if, you know, if Lisa were black or... Because she's the only person who has a different voice... then it would be, like, this weird, like, fetishization of race. And, yeah, I don't know. So I think he just wanted to make it as, you know, non-racial commentary as possible. And whether he, you know, whether he did that or not is up for debate. Sure. I definitely think, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it, so I think that he did a good job just sort of avoiding it.
Yeah, to me, I can see where you're coming from, Brendan, but for me it was... I'm more on the side of Logan, where it was like this movie was intentionally avoiding that.
Sure.
It was intentionally avoiding becoming about race, because that's not what this movie's about.
Yeah.
Right? So if everyone looks the same, exactly the same, everyone sounds exactly the same, and there is a random person of color, it would be distracting. You'd be like, why did you make that specific choice? And then you would call more attention to it, I think. I think the only alternative that would make a lot of sense and could have done, I guess, is just to have random people that look the same, have the same face,
have the same facial
have the same
build,
voice,
but then just have different skin colors,
have the same voice, have the same facial build, but and then you run it, but then you run into the issue of having Tom Noonan voice characters who are black, which there's no clear right answer, and I think the fact that I didn't even think about that while I was watching it means that it was at least not a point that came up in my mind, and I was focused on what Kaufman wanted me to be focused on, which was that this person feels alone.
Sure.
You know?
That's fair.
Hey, everyone. Just a quick note from editing Logan here. At this point in the episode, we got into a pretty in-depth discussion about race in Hollywood, the Oscars, colorblind casting, like, all sorts of things. And after the fact... we felt that although it was a pretty, you know, productive and thoughtful and respectful discussion, it was probably just best to cut it from the episode because there just wasn't all that much about Anomalisa, and, you know, that's what you're here to listen to us talk about. There was no real graceful way to edit around it, so I figured I'd just be candid and let you know that's basically what happened. So I will take you back to the episode now, where Brendan will kick off the final thoughts and ratings.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I didn't love this movie. I think that it was just kind of, it's this weird, like, misogynistic, predatory guy, who, like, I understand what Charlie Kaufman is trying to say, just in terms of, like, oh, you're alone, and, like, everyone is the same, and everything will become the same. But, like, to me, at this point, it's just so tired. Like, I'm kind of like, it's not that deep that you did it with puppets. I don't have much more to say on it than that. This is a short podcast. I'm going to give it a D. That's what I've been thinking. I just really didn't like this movie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I feel some of those issues with it, and I also, you know, this is my least favorite Kaufman so far. But overall, you know what? I like the idea, and I think the idea is going to stick with me, and the message that he's sending with using stop motion animation is very interesting. I'll probably not, you know, come back to it that much. But I don't dislike it at all. I just think it, like, it lacks a little bit of the depth. Like, I normally, when I watch a Kaufman film, I'm just like, just thinking about it and thinking about it so much after I watch it. When I finished this, I was like, yeah, okay. And I, like, you know, went to do something else, and it just hasn't really stuck with me. You know, it's one of those movies that we review on here that I only really remembered it as much as I did because I knew that I was going to have to talk about it on a podcast. So, you know, it's fine. It's inoffensive to me. I didn't find, you know, all the issues that Brendan had from the, you know, the social element of it. But, yeah, you know, I'm arguing between B and B plus. I think this is a B plus movie for me. So yeah, least favorite of Kaufman so far, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you on that one. I think that this is probably my least favorite of Kaufman. But again, I've loved all of Kaufman's movies. I wouldn't say that I love this movie. I really appreciate the idea and the intent going in and the ultimate theme. But it's not a movie that I ever really need to watch again. It's not a movie that the central relationship is something that I'm going to keep coming back to the way I do with Eternal Sunshine. Or it's not a wacky enough concept, I think, to stick with me, like being John Malkovich, you know, the visceral nature of just seeing John Malkovich, you know, dance around like a puppet in that one scene, which is a scene that I'll never forget. Like, you know, it doesn't have anything like that in this movie. In the end, I think this is a simple story. I appreciate the stop motion animation. I appreciate the work that goes into that always, because that I'm sure that took years. That this movie took years to photograph, probably, because I mean stop motion's insane. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a B plus as well. A really good movie, but definitely not one of my favorite Kaufmans. And you know, a good film that I don't really feel the need to watch again.
Yep. So an average of B minus.
Woo. Yeah. So next week we will be talking about. Or next episode, we'll be talking about I'm Thinking of Ending Things, the latest from Charlie Kaufman. Logan is holding up the book that he has right now by Ian Reid. Very excited to be talking about that movie. I think there is a lot more to talk about than with this movie. So definitely keep your eyes on the feed for that. Very excited for our last Charlie Kaufman review for now.
Yay.
Brennan, do you want to tell the good people about where they can find us on social media?
Absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Twisted Mug Media. We post a lot more on our Instagram, but if you follow us on Twitter, maybe we'll post some more on there too.
We'll tweet at you. What's the little like story things? They're called
fleets,
right?
Fleets.
I don't know. Why are they called fleets?
I don't fucking know. Because they're fleeting. Because they're like fleeting tweets. It's a pun. Damn it, Twitter.
Twitter and its bullshit puns.
Yeah. You can follow us on there. We also have a YouTube channel. You can find us at Twisted Mug Media Network. Is that what it's called? I don't remember. We have some videos up there that we've made, but recently we also started streaming on Twitch. You can find us at twitch.tv/TwistedMugMedia. I've done a couple streams. I played some Spider-Man Miles Morales. I played some Avengers. Nolan and I played some of a new game called Rogue Company that just came out. And hopefully we're gonna keep doing more streams and stuff. But all of the VOD is going to be uploaded to YouTube after we stream. So if you miss a stream, you can always find it on there. Which is super fun. And we also have a Letterboxd account, which is that we have a joint one for the Twisted Mug Media Network. And then on that page, you can also find all of our individual accounts. So if you want to see what we've been watching, last night, in addition to Anomalisa, I also watched the first Thor movie again, which I need to log that still. But I had some thoughts, you know, after watching it for the first time.
I remember not liking it.
It's not great.
Close to the bottom of the MCU, I'll say that.
That's fair. But I, and so you can go find those there. I think, am I forgetting anything? I think that's everything.
I'll just say real quick, I would like to stream, at some point. I need to figure out that capability on my laptop. If anything, I'll probably end up streaming something, cause I'm a sports guy, probably Madden or 2K or something. If you're into that, I like to do franchise mode and stuff, cause I like building teams.
Oh yeah, my dude.
So.
It's going to be dope.
So at some point you might see me on that Twitch channel doing that.
We also have some other shows on the network. If you liked hearing about movies, you can also listen to the Twisted Mug, Cinema Talk Movie Journal, which is Matt and Ryan's short form movie review podcast. There's also Stop Wait What, our improv comedy advice show, Back in Style, our newcomer friendly episodic review of Twin Peaks, Twisted Mug Mysteries, your one-stop shop for everything spooky and occult, Octo Island, our extended universe Star Wars podcast, and I Might Play That, our video game review podcast.
It's coming back someday.
So yeah, all of that good stuff is on the feed. Go and check that stuff out. I believe we have multiple Back in Styles in the can. We have a CTP movie journal in the can. We have our top 20 coming up. I'm sure we will be doing a Stop Wait What within the next couple weeks, so keep an eye on that. So a lot of content coming your way, a lot of different stuff, so keep an eye on all those places. So thank you so much for listening, guys. I'm Ryan.
I'm Brendan.
And I'm Logan.
And we'll talk to you next time. See you guys.
We can cut this silence.
Mommy, what's semen?
That was one of the funniest things. I just wasn't expecting it to come to me. I was so concerned.
Weren't you?
With jerking off the invisible man next to me.
You were expecting the invisible man to come to you, though, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That's a good movie.
Okay, I can go. This is...
Fat Peanut.
What did you just say?
Fat Peanut.
Fat Peanut. It's a verb.
It sounded like, but you sounded like, I don't even know what the voice is, but you were just like, fat peanut. Oh, look at these fat peanuts.
That's not what I was trying to do.
I love eating fat peanuts. They're so tasty. I just wish I could have them all the time.
Who is this character? Oh my god, just had a big gulp of water.
Mm-mm, tasty water. Thunderclap. Fat peen. Are you still... You're still not... Are you just laughing at everything I'm saying?
Yeah,
tonight?
I am.